Good evening. I'd like to call the Planning Commission meeting Tuesday, May 19, 2015 to order. Can I get a roll call, please?
Commissioner Keene?
Here.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Here.
Commissioner Mack?
Here.
And Commissioner Martin?
Here.
Chair George?
Here. If you could stand for the flag salute, Commissioner Fowler Payne.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We'll move forward with the agenda review. If the commission has any agenda items they'd like to reorder. No. Hearing none, we'll move on to community comments. This is a portion of the meeting where I invite the public to come speak on items not on the agenda tonight. Does anyone want to come up and speak? Okay, hearing none, I'll close the community comments period and move on to written communications. I don't believe we have any new written communications. Okay. So we'll move on to the consent agenda, approval of minutes for May 5th. Any changes to the minutes?
I wasn't here, so no comments.
Okay. So I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
So move.
Second.
Okay, and can we get a roll call vote on that, please?
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Commissioner Keene?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yes.
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
And Chair George?
Yes. We'll move on to public hearings. And the first item is consideration of appeal to the Planning Commission, case number 15-001, minor exception 15-003. The location is 257 La Cresta Drive. The appellant is Kristen Hammond. And if we please get a staff report.
Good evening, Commissioners. Chair George. So the subject property is located at 257 La Cresta, where the city recently approved a solid wood fence 8 feet in height along the rear property line. The neighborhood is constructed on sloping terrain with surrounding properties developed at varying levels. Pradera Court provides access to the neighboring home that abuts the rear yard fence location. When the fence height was approved on April 22nd, the neighbors were within 300 feet were notified of the decision. On May 1st, an appeal was filed, and two additional neighbors objected as well. The appeal hearing notice for tonight was sent to the neighbors within 300 feet and was publicly noticed. The municipal code allows an increase to the fence height allowance in rear yards from 6 feet to 8 feet. Through the processing of a minor exception permit. A minor exception allows flexibility based on unique site conditions such as sloping terrain and grade differences between adjoining properties. Staff reviewed the minor exception application, found that the property was categorically exempt from CEQA, and that site circumstances warranted the requested increase in height. The minor exception was approved due to the sloping nature of the lot and the desire for increased privacy due to the increased use of this area on the adjacent property. The height of the platform on the neighboring property is approximately 32 inches in height, which lowers the effective height of the 8-foot privacy fence to just over 5 feet. As you can see, a 6-foot height still reveals the windows on the applicant's house. While it's unusual to have privacy fences located on property lines on sloping lots, views from Pradera show that while the applicant's house is at a higher elevation than the neighboring property, it's close enough in height that a privacy fence is warranted in this location, that it would be effective. Because of the varying slopes and house sightings of the adjoining lots, potential long-range views in this neighborhood are limited through narrow openings between buildings. This view demonstrates how views are commonly blocked in this neighborhood by adjacent homes, fences, and planting, and long-range views are focused to the skyline above. Long-range views from the rear yards of these lots are directed out over the homes below and toward the hills above and beyond. The applicant currently has a 4-foot fence around the lot's developed yard space. This photo demonstrates that the elevation difference at this point is similar enough to warrant a privacy fence that is 8 feet tall. Staff recommends that the Planning Commission adopt a resolution denying the appeal 15-001 and approving minor exception 15-003. Thank you.
Thank you. Does the Commission have any questions for staff?
None at this point?
None.
Commissioner Mack, do you have any questions for staff?
In the past, when we've approved higher fences above the development code, it's because of topography. But it's been my experience that when we do that, it's a downhill grade, so you don't change the effective height from the higher side. You want 6-foot protection. And then the other side's 8 feet. In this case, it's transversing the grade. Is that correct?
Yes.
It's going parallel with the grade,
right,
as opposed
right.
to...
As you can see, yeah, it does that. But it also has a kind of a side slant slope up as well. So it's kind of an unusual situation. This is unique.
And also in the past, haven't we, if we do that sort of retaining situation, don't we require the walls or the fence to be stepped? And providing a planter on the high side?
There is no retaining, if that's what you're referring to, but this fence is following the grade, so it would be parallel in height.
I'm just asking for some history. I've past approvals, the way we have approved them in the past, we've either required them to be stepped and or different materials and not the same material for the full 8 feet.
And yes, indeed, especially if it goes beyond 8 foot, we'll require an offset. And I'm trying to be able to summarize, you know, the general nature of minor exceptions for fence heights. There's, you know, we issue them regularly, yet not often. And they often have to do with the grade as you suggested, where you would have an 8 foot plane on one side and a 6 foot on another, but not always. There's just very you know, the minor exceptions are granted when you have some kind of unique circumstance and it has something to do with the way a building is oriented or a privacy issue is. Experienced on a lot in terms of how houses are placed adjacent to one another.
Yeah, basically my question was is what in recommendations in the past for variance of wall heights or fence heights, what was the design and what kind of issues did you impose upon varying the fence height?
Yeah, and variances, of course, variances would exceed what the director's authority would be to issue a minor exception. But similar findings, there's something unique about it. And we've had just a very wide range of fence issues in terms of screening. And varying again with side yards versus backyards, and so I couldn't say, you know, it's we've issued them in this circumstance. It has been a diverse range of circumstances.
And then I had one other question regarding setbacks. What are the setbacks for this area for rear and side yard setbacks to structures?
Sure. The rear yard setback is 20 feet, and side yards are 5 and 10 for this size lot.
When is it 10?
It's 5 on one side, 10 on the other.
Okay. Thank you. That's it.
I was wondering if there was any restriction initially under the subdivision for the Homeowners Association or CCNRs that restricted any structures in this open space area. I looked on the track map and I didn't see anything for an open space easement, but we don't have access to restrictions on the CCNRs and the HOAs. If somebody has an answer for that.
We also did not notice any easements or restrictions on the track map. It's a question for the applicant, perhaps, if there's an HOA issue. I do not believe there is.
Do you have any other questions?
No.
Okay. At this time, I think we'll open it up to the public, and I'd like to hear from the appellant first, please. So, Kristen Hammond, would you like to come up and speak?
Can I hand this to you?
Sure.
Is this on? Okay.
Sounds like it.
Ever since I built my house, Mr. Gandolfo has been trying to get me to sign over that portion of the hillside that adjoins his property. And he even approached Ed Dorfman to try and get him to redraw the property lines before I closed escrow on my home. Mr. Gandolfo has tried for several years to persuade me to sign that piece of property over to him, and each time I told him no. As soon as he realized I wouldn't do what he was asking, he cut off all interaction with me. Before that, we were very neighborly. I used to visit with him and his wife in his home, and he used to bring my daughter birthday gifts. We began a remodel on our home about 2 years ago. At this time, we developed a 5-year plan for our home improvements. This included adding the sitting area to the hillside to enjoy the view, as well as landscaping the backyard and the front yard. As soon as we began working on the hillside, Mr. Gandolfo began calling city code enforcement, city planning, city engineering, and he even met with the mayor to try to stop us from enhancing our hillside. As soon as he realized he couldn't prohibit us from enhancing our hillside, he asked the city for a minor exception to build the 8-foot fence, citing privacy. When I realized the 8-foot fence was going to be right up against our sitting area, I realized he was doing this out of malice and spite. Building an 8-foot fence up against our sitting area clearly falls under the spite fence law. The definition of the spite fence law is a spite fence is a wall or fence that does not have a useful purpose and is meant to be erected and maintained for malicious reasons. This could be to obstruct a neighbor's view or flow of air or light to their property. A spite fence can even be built to irritate a neighbor or because of a neighbor dispute. This minor exception is clearly being done in spite. It will block the view from our sitting area that we have been looking forward to enjoying. It's only being done because Mr. Gandolfo could not stop us from using the piece of property he just so desperately wanted. If Mr. Gandolfo was concerned about privacy, he would make his current fence 6 feet tall, or even 8 feet tall, which I'm not opposed to. This 8-foot wall Mr. Gandolfo wishes to construct next to our current fence is clearly a spite fence, because Mr. Gandolfo can take care of any privacy issues by making his current fence in the current location 6 to 8 feet tall. He has no other issues with other neighbors looking into his property, just me. I do not have full view into Mr. Gandolfo's home or backyard, as you can see from my pictures. You can also see I do not have clear visibility into his home, as our sitting area is approximately 70 yards away from his residence at a much lower elevation. Trust me, I completely understand Mr. Gandolfo's want for privacy. I have lived for the past 12 years or so with Mr. Gandolfo looking into our backyard on a daily basis. I just think there's a better way of going about it other than obstructing our view and putting an unaesthetically appealing wall on the hillside. I am happy to pay for and install a tongue-and-groove wood fence to take the place of the open ranch-style fence we currently have to help with any privacy issues there may be. I chose to place an open ranch-style fence that will eventually fill in with the planted vegetation because I felt it fit our neighborhood better than a tongue-and-groove on the hillside. But I'm happy to make the changes if it pleases Mr. Gandolfo. As a compromise, I would be happy to make the fence 7 feet high. A tongue-and-groove will allow for full privacy for Mr. Gandolfo as there are no gaps. I believe this compromise is the best solution to the problem, as this is not really about privacy, but more about Mr. Gandolfo being very angry that I'm using my piece of property. Thank you.
Does the commission have any questions for the appellant?
None other than what I previously asked, if there was any kind of restriction initially when that subdivision went in for an open space area through there?
I believe all the CC&Rs were dissolved in 99.
Commissioner Mack, do you have any questions for the appellant?
This is clearly a sitting space, you know, place. It's not a living room. It's not, you're not putting a building or structure there. How often do you think you're going to use it?
I don't know, maybe two nights a week in the summer. It's just for us to go up and have a glass of wine and enjoy the view. And my husband only has two or three days off a week. You know, we might use it for an hour or two a couple times a week. It's not like it's going to be used all the time.
The other thing I noticed, it looked like it's more of a green screen, like you might have planted plants there and vines and stuff to grow and create a hedge. Mm-hmm. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Keene, do you have any questions?
Not at this time. Thank you.
No.
Do you have a question? No. Okay. Thank you. And at this time, we'll hear from the applicant, Frank Gandolfo, please.
I apologize. I'm 95, so I can't do what I'm supposed to do or say what I'm supposed to say. Please indulge me, please. I am 95, and I'm having problems. I busted my hand the other day, and I'm hurting. I'm reading this, please. You got to, you know. We are Frank and Lisa Gandolfo. We live on two. Before I go any further, let me say, and I'm 95 and I'm a World War veteran, but this woman that just came up here, I didn't know this was going to be a personal thing. I thought I gave 11 years of my military for just 2 foot of wood. That's all I want. And this woman, I've never seen her but one time. My wife and I agree, right?
Yes.
One time. When a daughter has the same birthday as I have, April 1st, I went down and I gave him a doll. That was the first time I've seen her. This coming up here is the second time I've seen her in 13 years. 13 years, I've never seen her. Mr. Ruiz, who does my gardening for 13 years, we maintained her property and mine when she was single, and I paid for it. We never seen her. My gardener's already written a thing that he's never seen it. So this is a fantasy land. I don't understand in all my years that somebody could be so libelous to impugn my character that I said this. I don't even know what she looks like. My wife and I don't even, it's so absurd. I never knew what she even looked like. I never knew her name. This is the God's honest truth. And I swear it on my wife's dead grave. Anyway, it's impossible that she can accuse me of all these things. How can you talk about somebody when you never seen her? Second time, don't know her name, don't know her telephone book, don't know anything about her. Now she's rallied the effort of Petty Welch, and everything she knows she's been saying is from Petty Welch. It's not from her. Cause how she know these things when she don't even know me? I don't even know the woman.
Thank you, Mr. Gandolfo. We're ready to hear your written speech. Are you ready to read to us what you have written?
Yeah,
there?
I want to read this. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyway, indulge me. Frank, and I would like to thank the panel for their time and effort. I would like to thank you people. Please, and one of my doctors, he says you're a good-looking banana, but you're rotten inside. You know, that's what he gave me, and I paid him for that advice. Anyway, I am one of five brothers in war at the same time. I was in World War II, and I was in Korea. I was a veteran of two wars. I have three honorable discharges. I got one from World War II, I got one from the active reserve, and then when I was recalled to Korea, I got that discharge. So, anyway, I was recalled in 51 and 53. After discharge, I visited Arroyo Grande in 1954. I walked these streets 61 years ago. I walked these streets. I am now in the centennial can. They took because I was 91. I was scoutmaster and commissioned through 54. In Woodland Hills. I was scout master and commissioner there, and the mayor was Buster Keaton. Anybody know Buster Keaton? Anybody know Buster Keaton? No. Anyway, he's my buddy. Anyway, I was also counselor, being I never drank or smoked. I was counselor of the teenage alcoholics and drug addicts, children, teenagers. I was in the CCCs, and I fought fires in Montana and Canada. All documented. Everything I say here is documented. I am the last of eight children. I'm the only one standing. Five of my brothers, we were all in the service at the same time. I moved to Arroyo Grande in 1995 with my family, and we were, a tragedy struck. In 1998, I lost my wife and two sons.
That was the 3-minute limit, Mr. Gandolfo. I'm not going to stop you, but if you could direct your comments as towards your
anyway,
building.
Okay, we'll go back here to privacy.
Yeah, we're proposing a building.
So we are proposing to build an 8-foot fence to have our privacy back. All this for 2 foot of wood. Our intruders want a 6-foot fence so they can have their view, but still a 6-foot, which is verified by a professional fencer and the city of Arroyo Grande. They checked it. They look right into our house. Every day, we got to close all of our blinds. We have no privacy. He looks full view now, especially with that platform, which is even to the top of my fence, my 4-foot fence. Their platform is right on top. He stands up. We see him in full view. So we have absolutely no privacy. I can't walk naked into my own house anymore, in my bedroom, in my living room. I'm having coffee. Anyway, we lost our privacy. It's gone. We have consulted a fencer, and he said you have to have, he measured an 8-foot fence. So all we are asking is to give us the 2 additional fence so we can open our blinds and let the sun shine in. All this has taken a toll on both Lisa and I. At 95, my twilight age, I'm starting to go. 11 years of military service, and now I'm fighting for 2 feet of wood and privacy. Something is wrong here. So, you know, five brothers, we gave our blood. I'll gladly submit. I'll swap you a whole bunch of medals for 2 foot of wood so I can have my privacy, and my wife can walk any way she wants. I ask you people, would you want to be in a house where you do not have privacy in your home and your windows are open to anybody, not just the people who are complaining, but anybody. But to be impugned by a woman who's never really seen this but one time. She accused me of walking down and measuring a foot. I can't even walk, but she accused me of that. Patty accuses me of cutting down a tree. The tree wasn't mine. It was an oak tree that belonged to Mr. Always next door. So all of this, why are they picking on a couple, my wife's 78, I'm 95, And we just want what life we have left in privacy. The word privacy, that's all we want. I'm not asking what they're building. I could care less. I want my privacy. Right. And I'm sure any of you women would like the privacy. My wife doesn't have privacy anymore. So whatever they come up with is fantasy and is libelous. It's very libelous what they're saying about us. And they signed the paper that I did this, and they signed their name, and it's libelous. And I can't understand what kind of people would be like that to take old people's privacy away. I can't enjoy my house anymore. So anyway, whatever you hear from here on in, it's almost impossible that a woman who we've never seen but one time, that she comes up with all this radical stuff. And I have a time. When I lost my wife and sons, I didn't have time for you know. So anyway,
thank you, Mr.
Gandolfo. My life to you people. What am I going to do, you know?
Thank you.
You're going to hear whatever you're going to hear, but you know my life now. My neighbors even know my life.
I appreciate your comments. Thank you. Does the commission have any questions for the applicant?
God bless you, and I hope everything's okay. By the way, my sergeant in the Army, he was a Scotsman, and he was a great guy, and he gave us all kinds of advice. And he says, if you can't say good about a body, say not at all. So that's the thing. If you can't say good about somebody, don't say anything. I've lived by that
all
my life.
Thank you for your service.
Thank God for my wife from Finland. If it wasn't for her, I'd be dead. If you've got a good wife, you've got a good life. I got a great wife.
Before you leave, Mr. Gandolfo, because there may be some questions for some of us here on the commission.
Pardon?
There may be some questions from those of us on the commission.
Sure.
So just save you running back and forth there.
Okay. Yeah.
Does the commission have any questions for the applicant?
I do. It indicated, Kristen had indicated that she would be willing to put up a 7-foot fence. Approve a 7-foot fence instead of the 8. Would that resolve the issue with you to have seven and a compromise?
A professional came here. And he's a known professional, and he came here and he measured. And he says, if they stand on that platform, they better be short, because 6 foot won't get it. And he says, 7 foot won't get it. He measured. He's a professional. I can bring his name in. And he says, it's got to be 8 feet. So now we went to city. The city went down and inspected, and they concurred the same thing. They said, 6 foot won't do it, 8 foot. Now, I'm arguing for 1 foot. Now, when in case I say 7 foot's okay and they look over it, do I come back to you people and say, give me my privacy back for 1 foot? I'm only asking for 2 feet. What? Why in the world? And I have a right to ask for it. It's on my property. I'm not engaging their property. I'm not saying what they're building. And all of these accusations, I'm a Sicilian. I don't talk to them. I don't think on anybody. I don't do that. So.
Thank you. Do we have any other questions for the applicant?
Any other questions?
I have a couple questions. The existing fences, I look at this other one drawing, you have to the rear of your house, looks like a fairly nice-sized patio. And on the back of that patio, you have a fence. And how tall is that existing fence?
4-foot fence.
Okay. And my question would be, when I'm listening and looking at this from both sides, I understand the desire for privacy, and I understand that, you know, the hilly nature of that location where 6 feet in and of itself may not be appropriate. But I'm also seeing that an 8-foot fence at that immediate place is not really providing you privacy, because what I'm looking at is the back third, or the back, probably the back third of your property is really sitting fairly idle. Had you considered putting up a fence, say, 20 or 30 feet from the property line, closer to your home, or even increasing the size of the existing fence from 4 to 6, or requesting that to be increased, maybe to allowing you to put an 8-foot fence at the edge of your patio?
Well, live or die, I need an 8-foot fence for your question. For the 4-foot fence and to put some, I in my neighborhood, when I sat down, when I first built that house, I said, I want to sit down and not have a fence block me. So I said, so I had a 4-foot fence put in, which since then several other people have. And in fact, a house down the street, they had a 6-foot fence and they cut it down to 4. So the reason for the 4-foot fence is that I'm 5'6". I can't see over 6 foot. If I'd have put a 6-foot fence there, I'm dead in the water. I can't see anything. So I want to enjoy the property I have, and I've been through tragedies and stuff, I've always wanted to put a grape arbor down there. I wanted to put the orange trees. I got one orange tree in my yard. I like to be able to look over my property. So a 6-foot fence, take off my 4-foot fence and put it. I'm in prison. I can't see over my fence to my own property. So that, although if it makes sense or not, so that's why I never did it, and my neighbors didn't do it. So to answer your question about a fence, and now it's getting to the point now, a 7-foot fence. I never contemplated that anybody would come up and discuss between a 7- and 8-foot fence. I said, it's just, if you come to my house, I am inviting all of you people to come to my house, come in my bedroom while these people are working, and you'll see a full view of the person there in our bedroom. I go in the living room and I'm having a cup of coffee, full view. I got a 4-foot fence. Now, should I put a 6-foot fence so he can't see my coffee? No. That takes my privacy away from my own backyard. So as far as coming this way, then I'm playing into their game that they can condition or they can control what I want, what they want. They want a view. A view is God-given, but a privacy is man-made, and they took my privacy away, and my value of my property has gone down. Brokers have come there, and I've... So if there's any other question you want to ask me, I'd be glad to answer.
Do you have any more questions, Commissioner?
No, thank you.
Is that all right? Did you get my answer?
I got your answer, yes. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Keene.
I'm sure no one here would like to be...
Commissioner Mack.
...my house.
They're pretty much answered, but I had one other question. Did you have a civil engineer or have anyone...
Industrial engineer.
...or have any kind of topography?
What's his name? Matt Horn came to visit me, and he saw my... I worked for Rockwell International for 30 years, and I was in the nuclear physics group. I was in the space program. It's all written. The federal government has written me a whole full... Anybody wants to read it, my life is open. And so I was in a nuclear field, and I was also in a space field.
So, no, you haven't?
I have what?
You don't have a topography?
No.
Topo of the site?
What's his name? Pace. Scott Pace, whose folks used to own the lumber yard. He came out here with a measuring. He came to my property, and he checked it. It's a 30-degree angle. It's 30 degrees. What it goes right down to their property... And it goes right down into the backyard of Mrs. Hammond. If a storm comes along, it goes right in her backyard. There's no question of it. But gravity is that gravity. So as far as the degree, it is a 30-degree angle, and it is in a very, very high fire area. Stephen, the captain of the fire department, you know him? Anyway, he came along.
You already answered my question, but thank you.
Anyway, I'm just, you know, everybody's going to come up with all. So I'm fighting for my life here and my privacy and my wife. I'm a man and I can take it, but what they're doing to my wife is not right. No woman should put up with it.
Thank you. You may be seated.
Anyway, my hand hurts and my butt hurts and I'm tired. Thank you. Thank you. God bless you all. Even my enemies. God bless them too. You too. Give me back my life, people.
Seeing no more questions for the applicant, we're going to move forward to public comments. Did everyone fill out a speaker slip that needed to fill one out? Great. So we're going to limit this to 3 minutes per person or less if you can, because we do have quite a big list of speakers. So we'll start with Don Rogers, please.
I'm Don Rogers, live on La Cuesta Drive, right across the street from Frank. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to talk here. It's not a pleasant moment. I mean, we're talking about the perceived lack of privacy from one of our senior citizens. Unfortunately, he's the one who thinks he is privileged above others. Mr. Gandolfo has, over the years I've known him, proven to be a bully. He starts with perceived injustice against him, starts making a request, escalating the request and demands, and then calls the city's zoning, law, fire, any other department he can to try to get his way. He has badgered at least one of the neighbors into cutting down producing fruit trees because he could not see the park when he sat on his couch. At the time, I owned a pickup truck. It had a camper shell on it. And in the back window of the camper shell, I parked it in the driveway, by the way. He calls and complaining that the sun was shining off the window and blinding them where they sat to have coffee. I went out and I opened, cracked the window open, raised it up so it changed the angle. And I was immediately called again on the phone, and that wasn't good enough. I had to do something different. Well, this went on for some time. And finally I said, look, I'm not moving the truck. I need a place to park it. I don't park it on the street. So we kind of left that alone at that time, I thought. 11 years later, after I've sold the truck, I get another call. Sun's shining off the back window of my Lexus now, and it's blinding him. I told him at the time, I said, Frank, we've already had this conversation, and nothing's changed in 11 years. We're not going to talk about it anymore. So a couple days later, police car shows up in front of the house. A gentleman from Neighborhood Services comes up, and Frank had called and placed the complaints with them about the sun shining off the window of my truck, or my car. He said that he had talked to Frank. Frank had a letter from a doctor that he shouldn't look at bright lights, that Frank was going to sue me, but there was no violation, and there was no need for me to do anything. No formal complaint was open. So nothing has come of the threat for the suing yet. That may change. So now Mrs. Harmon decided to utilize a property she is owner of, and Mr. Gandolfo, having failed in his claims of ownership to that property, now wants to erect what is commonly known as a spite fence or spite wall, something to be unpleasant to Mrs. Harmon and to ruin her from enjoying the property she owns. The claims of his privacy concerns fly in the face of common sense. First, on numerous occasions when we were still talking to one another, he told me about the windows that he had special
coating. That's your 3 minutes. I'm sorry. We need to move on to other speakers. Thank you.
Any questions?
Not at this time. We're just taking public comments at this time.
You can't see the fence at all.
So we have Mike McConville. You here? And at this time, if I could request that the comments are made directly in regards to our purview, which is the fence, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Mike McConville, 529 East Branch Street. It's been a while since I've stood in front of you folks. Of course, it was a different council. Anyway, Frank and Lisa asked me to come and give a little response to some of the neighbors' derogatory statements about him. We've only known good from Frank and Lisa. That's beside the point. My background's about 20 years of accounting, about 20 years of real estate, and about 10 years of lending. I've run into this situation before, and I've lent on properties like this. People have a right to use a property, that's for sure. And some people build a gazebo, you know, with a permit and everything else on the back of the property. That's not saying that they somehow mitigate somebody's view. Frank and Lisa have had a view over there for many, many years, and it's a shock. at this point in time to take that away. They can't even walk around in their house. And I've been to the property. I've looked at it. And I would have the same problem. What I would probably do different is not build a fence, 10-foot fence back there, but I would come forward into the property and build a arbor, grape arbor or something like this. And you might address that issue and advise the applicant as to what they could do, and the height of it would diminish and take away the factor that's at hand here. Anyway, there is another factor that when you build something on the on a slope, a 30% slope like this, you've really there's drainage ditches up there. And I see also right now, if we had a bad storm right now, one of those ditches is clogged, half filled with rock, things like this. And I know they're constructing up there, so I take that in consideration. But something has to be put forth that, and or maybe the CCNRs be examined again to make sure that they keep those, being that they're going to be traveling up and down that hill, they keep those drainage ditches open, things like that, because that can be a disaster for them and other people. The other issue is if I guess they're not going to have any kind of fire pit or anything like that up there. I didn't see anything. But if that is the case, the fire department would, of course, would have some say about that. And the restrictions on the CCNRs, whether or not people can use the hillside for certain things, should be looked at. Thank you very much.
Thank you. William Ashley.
Hi, I'm William Ashley. I've known Frank for close to 20 years, and he asked me to come here to speak for his character. But as far as the fence is concerned, I can tell you that this has really upset him about his privacy. So I would just want to reinforce that it has been a big issue for him. And I think he's a good guy.
Thank you. Okay. Jim Boyle.
Good evening. My wife and I have lived on Oro Drive since 1977. When we bought our house, we're on Oro Drive. Nothing was out to the west or basically the east. Anyway, I have two questions that I think the residents of Rio Grande need to have answered. Because earlier in your discussion, you've talked about past practices. When did we approve? When didn't we approve? So my two questions that I hope you would write down to really consider. What is your criteria to allow a resident to build a structure that negatively impacts a neighbor? That's my first question. My second question is reverse of that. When we bought our house on Oro Drive, it's on the hill behind us is on the east side of Wildwood Estates. And we bought the house because we had privacy. About 10 years, 15 years after we built the house, developers wanted to put in condominiums. The neighbors protested for traffic reasons, water runoff, and it was denied. Then, several years later, a house was built. Huge house, 4,000 square feet. None of us living on Rio Grande, on Oro Drive, no longer have any privacy. As I've gone up to the house, walked my dog, I look down, I see everything in everyone's backyard. So my question is, what criteria does the commission use to allow a house to be built that invades the privacy of everyone living below them or near them? I've heard a lot of emotion tonight. I understand the emotion. But I've also understood at your very beginning of your opening statements how many of you asked many questions regarding what is past practice. And I think as a resident of Rio Grande, speaking for others that we've lived here for 40 years, what are your criteria? That would end a lot of the discussion that is tonight, because it seems criteria varies from situation to situation, and I understand that. But you need basic criteria. Are there any questions?
Thank you for your comments.
You're welcome.
Susan Flores. Good evening.
Good evening, Planning Commission. Susan Flores, 529 East Branch. I've known Frank for about 25 years. I knew him and Peg, and I've known him and Lisa. So he called me the other day. I went out to the property. He was quite upset. I said, I'll give you a call in a little couple hours. And Mike and I went over there. And we went through the house. We went to the little backyard, and I could really see how emotional they were. Drapes were open, and I could see, yeah, okay, you don't, right, when they're there, you will have no privacy. And it is a big issue for them. You know, they can't freely leave their drapes open, which their master bedroom and their living room are all to the back of the house and their yard. So they no longer feel that they can leave anything open. And they feel they're living in sort of a darkness because they close in these drapes. And they have to kind of see if the coast is clear. Can we open them? Are they going to come out there? Are they building? What's going to happen when they permanently are using it? It's kind of like a feeling like you're being stalked, even though that's not the intent of the other people in this case. But when you lose your rights to walk freely in your own piece of property, and they are older, but I don't think it would matter if it was older. If it was my house, I know the house very well. Been there many times. All of a sudden, you have this feeling, well, okay, I'll build a fence. It'll be 8 feet. It'll go down on the topography. So the way I looked at it, you know, they just have a stretch of their view. Their lot at the where their building is continues further down to where their house is. So, yeah, they may lose a little window, which is part of Frank's tunnel, but they're not going to lose over here to the right of Frank. They're going to still have their whatever they can see. I haven't been in their yard to actually see what visions they have between the different homes that are already there. So they're not going to lose 100%. They're going to lose that window, and he needs that back. He doesn't have the time to plant trees and wait for them to grow in 20 years because Frank's not going to be here in 20 years. We all know that. So, you know, it may seem like it's a hateful wall or something like that, but it's really not. They need to be in his. They get up in the morning, their bed's right there. They can't even open their curtains. And that's the way it is. Thank you.
Thank you. Scott Shepherd.
My name is Scott Shepherd. I live at 543 Gillardy. I'm not here to talk about a fence. I didn't know anything about a fence until a couple of days ago when Frank called and left a message with me. But he asked me to speak on behalf of his character, and I've known Frank for almost 20 years, and I used to live in his neighborhood for about six, and he's always been gracious and respectful toward myself and the rest of my family. So.
Thank you. Appreciate those comments. Patty Welsh.
This is going to take me about 3 minutes and 30 seconds, and with the time Frank got, please appease me with that time. I'm one of the residents affected by the 8-foot wall proposed by Mr. Gandolfo, who, when he purchased his property, he clearly knew the property lines and still purchased the homes. I want to point out, some neighbors did not realize this was placed on some... I want to point out, some neighbors did not realize this was not to replace the current fence he has. And the pictures that Mr. Gandolfo supplied are zoomed in and poor examples of the project. Let me start by stating the seating area Ms. Hammond is putting in will not be used most winters when it is dark outside or when it is overcast and cool. She also works full-time, so she will use this area a few hours a year. But our views will be affected 365 days a year. Under site topography, it states the Gandolfo property sits at approximately the same elevation, when in fact, he is at a higher elevation. There is no clear visibility into the Gandolfo residence. That is false and misleading. You can see the windows, you can't see in them. The seating area is approximately 100 feet away, and because of the tint on the windows, you cannot see in during daylight hours. In Mr. Gandolfo's rebuttal, he states that they can see into his bedroom. When I was last in that house, that bedroom was a shrine, with all due respect, and he slept in the front bedroom of the house, so don't be misled. And I also sat in the living room across the street, and I've seen straight into Frank's house and out through his back patio. And he's worried about privacy. The report also states the 8-foot wall would reduce the amount of visibility the neighboring property has into the improved portion of the applicant's rear yard. And a person of normal height could possibly see over a 6-foot fence and see further into the residence. Possibly and probably are two different things. Kristen is 5'2". Her husband is not even 6 foot tall. The report goes on to state, reducing the proposed fence height or permitting an 8-foot wall closer would impact the applicant's privacy and views. At the back of the improved area is a 4-foot fence. He could increase that to 5 foot and get the similar results as with the 8-foot wall. And it might give him more privacy, but what about the Hammonds? And now another direct neighbor to Mr. Gandolfo is talking about putting in a seating area closer to the Honeycutt's property. So is Frank now going to ask for an 8-foot wall on the north side of his property? And the Angleos to the south are also working up their hillside, and because of serious health issues, could not participate in this process. But they will also be very affected by this wall also. The other disadvantage is what it will do to Ms. Hammond should she wish to sell her home. Do you want to look at an 8-foot wall right next door? Mr. Gandolfo has also stated to code enforcement he is trying to sell his house and hopes to move in January. Maybe that would be best, since residents are wanting to use the land they pay taxes on, and it does not seem to please Mr. Gandolfo. The report also states a 6-foot height limit will deprive the property owners the same level of privacy enjoyed by properties in the same zone district. I could put up an 8-foot fence and have no more privacy than I do now. And the sheet I handed you gives you more addresses just like mine. To allow an 8-foot wall is not compatible with the neighborhood. It's based on false assumption of the ability to see into the residence, will have a negative visual and possible financial impact on others, and it will not be aesthetically pleasing. By legal definition, it defines a spiteful fence, and the courts have denied homeowners the right to put them up. Does this city and Mr. Gandolfo really want to proceed to the point of legal actions being taken? Because we are ready to file paperwork and go through the court system if that is what is needed. And page 5, item 4, clearly states that Mr. Gandolfo will be responsible for legal costs and expense brought against the city as well as his own legal costs. This is a spiteful fence and should not be allowed. In closing, I would like to ask that everyone who is opposed to this project please stand to be acknowledged. I also want to thank the 4 commissioners who came out to meet with me and look at this project in person. Thank you.
Thank you. Tyler Brown.
Enough.
Hi, my name's Tyler Brown. I've lived in Rio Grande for 20-some-odd years, and I live at 400 Rodeo Drive. And for those of you familiar with my rodeo, we have our height issues, too. Backyards, hills, and so we've been through this. Two points I want to make is, one, Frank and Lisa are very, very tremendous people. They've been very kind to me and tremendous character. The other is that I think they deserve their privacy. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other comments? Seeing none, I'm going to close the comment period. We're going to close the public comment period for now. Thank you. I'm going to bring it back to the commission. Commissioners, do you have any further questions before we move to comments? No?
No.
I have one question. And how close to the property line is this platform that Hammonds have built on their property?
Who are you addressing?
Anybody.
Let's address staff.
City.
Let's address staff.
I don't know.
It appears to me that it's 5 feet.
That doesn't show an aerial photo of where the setback would be.
I did. I was one of the individuals that went out and checked out the site, and it appeared to be 5 feet. I have a question, too.
Were those all your questions?
I was just wondering, you know, what the possibility of doing a landscape buffer along there more than just the small shrubs that they have growing, which would give them both privacy and not have a barricade effect. I mean, if you came in with some large shrubs along that area that would give them the privacy, would also give you the privacy of your platform where you don't have them looking into your property. I think that might be a good resolution to the problem rather than having a permanent wood structure there.
Okay. Do you have any other questions?
No.
Okay. Commissioner Martin, do you have any questions or comments?
No questions. I do have some comments, but if there's another question, I'm happy to defer.
Commissioner Mack, do you have any questions?
My question is directed towards staff. Is there any other restrictions on these properties in terms of building guest units or additional structures?
The size of the lots are generally large enough to allow for a second residential unit. There may be some drainage easements in the tract as well, which wouldn't you wouldn't be able to block with structures. I'm happy to take the opportunity to just clarify and build on your previous questions on the historical nature of issuances of minor exceptions, because it was brought up by the public. And so I'll take a step back and just start with the fact that there's certain discretionary and ministerial types of applications. The ministerial types of applications would pertain to a 6-foot fence, for example, where there wouldn't be a building permit issued or any exception being requested. A single family house is also a ministerial issuance where there's no discretionary action being requested on the part of the city. So the example that was brought up by the in public comment of a subdivision, a condominium subdivision, would have been a discretionary action. What about public hearing? Would have required conditions of approval and certain findings for subdivision maps, and et cetera. A single-family house is ministerial, and if they're not asking any exceptions to the zoning development standards, then would not require any notification or discretionary hearing. So I just wanted to make that clarification. And the only other item, perhaps, in terms of restrictions is if there is a two-story structure If there's a single story and a request comes in for a second story, we do have a process for that, and that's a viewshed review. Viewshed review permit is also an administrative approval, and there's findings specific to the viewshed, but it's only for two-story structures. It's not for fences.
So to tailor on to that, because I was leaning into a question with that, with my 20-foot setback question, the 5-foot and the 10-foot side yard, mm-hmm. One can conceivably put a guest unit in the rear of this property and not go through the viewshed requirement if it was single story. That's and that if it was two-story, they could still move forward with an application like that.
That's
through
correct.
The viewshed. Okay.
That's correct. And I don't know the nature of the overall area, but that's correct. If a second residential unit that meets the criteria set forth in the development code would just simply need a building permit unless it's two stories or they're requesting an exception into a setback.
Thank you.
Commissioner Keene, did you have any questions? Okay. We're going to move on to comments at this point. We'll start with Commissioner Fowler Payne.
No, I think I made it with regards to the fact that I think that maybe there is a way of resolving it by doing a landscape buffer there instead of a fence. But if we're making a judgment based on our ordinance guidelines, which is what our position is, then the fence is allowable. So, whether it suits whosoever need or desire for us to make a decision, it's not going to be on our personal opinion, but based on what the ordinance guidelines are. And that is saying that he did have the availability of adding the 2-foot height on the 6-foot fence. That's my comment for now.
Thank you. Commissioner Martin.
Thank you. I've got a slightly different take. This is clearly the rights to put up a 6-foot fence on a perimeter fence around a residential is standard and approved and doesn't require any other, I'll say, permitting or decision making. The way I understand it is going from 6 feet to 8 feet is an exception to the standard criteria, and that is what's forcing this hearing because of the appeal. Does he have a right, or does the applicant have a right to put up an 8-foot fence? He has a right with an 8-foot fence if he's granted that exception. I also agree that privacy is an important attribute in home ownership. Our community isn't any different than any other community around. And I certainly have an awful lot of respect for that. You start getting into these hilly areas and view shed and privacy become much more difficult to kind of establish and start putting, framework and guidelines on, because you can stand at the high edge of one piece of property and see downhill fairly easily, whether there's a 6-foot fence or there isn't a 6-foot fence. So, I agree with the privacy. It's also kind of sad to me that in this specific situation, these tensions have risen to a point that the creation or the erection of an 8-foot fence becomes this contentious a point. I would hope that neighbors would be neighborly in getting a resolution of this kind. But when I'm looking at this, it certainly seems to me that there are a variety of alternatives where the applicant could retain the privacy that he's seeking without blocking and creating an 8-foot-high wall on the immediate property line adjacent to this backyard kind of patio area that the applicant is making. So my suggestion is, much like my neighbor here to the right, that I think that there are a number of alternatives, and I would hope that the applicants and the neighbors could come up with some of those alternatives. But for myself, I can't support it because I think that there are other alternatives that are going to be a lot better and much less damaging without the applicant having to lose his privacy rights. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you. Commissioner Keene.
Yes. for the audience's knowledge, I did spend quite a bit of time out on the project, and I don't agree with the staff's exception that that's allowable 8-foot fence. Every 8-foot fence that I've ever been associated with approving is when the one side is lower than the other. This is on level land, and I don't think an 8-foot fence is appropriate. Now then, I stood on that pad and looked at the applicant's house, and I'm 6 foot tall, and they have a 6-foot post right there, and I could barely see a big portion of those windows. So to put an 8-foot fence up there is just not going to benefit anybody. I just don't think it's necessary. Talking about solutions, I even have one of my own. There was talk by Ms. Hammond that she was willing to build a solid fence here. When I stood there and looked over the top of that pole right there, it's where I'm saying that I could just barely see, and that pole is 6 foot tall. If, in fact, she built a 7-foot fence down to this post right here and then went to 6 foot on down, sitting here, that would not obstruct her view of the hillside over here and would make him so he can't see somebody standing on this platform. To me, that is a solution that I would really highly recommend. And in that way, Mr. Goffel doesn't even have to spend the money for any fence. So it looks like that compromise would satisfy or work out for both neighbors. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner King. Commissioner Mack?
I believe in property rights. I really do. I believe people should have the right to develop their property as they see fit and how it works with their vision and intention, how they want to live. What I can't support is one person exercising their property right when it affects someone else's property right. I don't think you can't say that privacy is more important than view or view is more important than privacy. I don't think that we have the right, once someone is established, you know, and they put a lot of effort into doing a nice patio and, you know, go wine tasting and enjoy their property and see that mountain view, for another person to exercise their right to put up an 8-foot fence to shield that view. When I was there, the only portion that I can see is if I stood on the very end of that 32-inch wall, there was a sliver that I can see the windows. But when I was down on that patio and walking around the property, I did not see some of the views that were taken from some of these pictures. And I don't know how they're taken, but the few that were presented here, and feel free to put these on the overhead, this was more of my experience that I'd like to pass on to staff to put on the overhead so the public can see. I think that would be fair. I also think that the options of protecting the privacy has not been fully exercised. I have not seen anything from the property owner providing a topographical survey and a line of sight going over the top of the fence to see how much of the property you can see down below. That information hasn't been provided. So we're relying on our ability to actually walk the property and see it from our own sites and our own vantage points. I am 2'6". My eye is probably about 5'4". And I could not see into any bedrooms or any living spaces. It's kind of normal to think that, you know, once we're on top of a hill that we win, and then we can see into everyone else's properties. And that's just, that's not right. We all should have the right to have and see the vistas and the views. And we should all have the right to privacy. I believe there are probably ways with planting and vegetation in that one panel section, as Mr. King has explained, letting that go up to 7 feet. I could be in support of that. But I think even more natural is not to bend from our rules, handle it with landscaping. Also look at the option of maybe in the one area or the one bedroom up on the 4-foot fence, maybe increasing that fence to 6 feet. There are options here. None of the options have been explored. None of those options have been brought before us. But I do hear that some people are willing to try something else. And that's what I'd like to hear. I'd like to hear more about how we're going to resolve this as a neighborhood.
Thank you, Commissioner Mack. I find that when we are up here listening to everyone as emotional and as tense as the comments can be, our job is to look at code and to look at our plans and make a decision based on the facts, not emotions, but facts. I, too, had an opportunity to visit the property and look up at Mr. Gandolfo's house. And granted, I'm not 6 foot. I'm only 5'2". I wasn't able to see in. Even if I was 6 foot, maybe it was the time of day that I was there. There was a glare, and the windows just looked black to me. So whether they're open or closed, I wouldn't have been able to see in. They were just black. There's a substantial amount of open space between Mr. Gandolfo's back fence and the proposed fence. I don't feel that an 8-foot fence so far removed from his property will offer any more privacy than a 6-foot fence would. I do, however, believe that adding those extra 2 feet and making the exception would hinder the appellant's view. So that being said, at this point, I cannot support the attached resolution, and I believe that we need to take tentative action to approve the appeal and then to direct staff to return with an appropriate resolution and findings. So I'd like to
entertain a motion.
I'd like to entertain a motion. I can make that a motion. I'm happy to do so. All right, so I will move to not adopt the attached resolution and to take tentative action to approve the appeal case number 15-001 and provide direction to the staff to return with an appropriate resolution, including findings for denial of the minor exception case number 15-003.
Second.
Could I please get a roll vote, please?
Chair George?
Yes.
Commissioner King?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
And Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
So the motion has been passed and approved by all 5 members of the committee. Thank you for your time.
I said I would have sent him to the rooms until they could come out and act like nice little kids. I think a landscape buffer is what they need, not a fence. Dropping it. Well, they had that one picture where it shows. I mean, if they just put it here and then didn't even have one there. But it does look like they're having a fire pit. Those pictures, the light. That's a. I know this property because. I don't have a conflict with it, but my dad owned several places around, so I did not need to go see the site. I knew it very well. He and Dorfman were good friends, and so my dad bought lots there and built, and he actually lived on Patina for a while.
We'll move on to the non-public hearing items. Consideration of the Capital Improvement Program for fiscal year 2015-2016 and 2016-2017, consistency with the general plan. Please get a staff report.
Thank you, Chair George. I'm going to introduce Mike Lynn, our capital projects engineer, and he's going to review the capital improvement program as proposed, and will be going to council shortly in the fiscal year 15-16, 16-17 budget. And the request of you this evening is to review the plan for conformance, to see if it conforms with the city's general plan. Mike?
Good evening. I'll try to make this brief but complete. I actually implement most of the capital projects through the city. I work for the Public Works Department, so if we get into anything that's code-related, we might have to go back to Teresa McLeish. Also, please indicate if I'm taking too long, give me some kind of signal like yawning, and I'll speed it right up. But with that, she did mention we're trying to craft our capital improvement. Well, actually, we do craft our capital improvement program to conform with the city's general plan. And one thing we do, it's on this very first line, implement master plans, council goals, and state mandates. The majority of our projects are actually maintenance related. They're keeping our infrastructure going. And to do that, we have master plans for just about every major component. So you have a sewer master plan, a water master plan, pavement management, trying to remember, drainage, yes. And we try to identify the existing state of the system. And we go through and identify what we'd have to do to maintain that system, and then identify any improvements that we'd want to make, and then take that over a certain time horizon and try to divvy up the money to make sure that we can actually do that given our budget allocations. So with that, it says multi-year projects. I believe most of that is dealing with our yearly projects, such as pavement management, where we slurry seal part of our streets to keep them up over a period of time. Not automatic, gets reviewed every budget cycle. That is true. We do reevaluate where we're at because conditions do change, prioritizing its need and available funding. That's pretty much the whole ballgame. New this year, capital improvements. I think we're going to get into that in slides that are coming up, and capital maintenance. I think what we have right now coming up this summer, we have our street resurfacing projects. And that's actually done in two different phases. The first phase, we go through and we identify on all the streets all the imperfections, places that have failed, so we can do isolated pocket repairs. And then we come in and we do a street resurfacing, usually slurry seal or microsurfacing. It's an oil and asphalt mix. It's mixed with sand, and it goes over the surface and provides 5 to 7 years of wear. If things are too much, we actually go in and we do an overlay, but that's actually very expensive, and that's what we try to avoid. The goal is to try to go through and get everything into a certain level and then maintain that level over time with cheaper methods. Anytime you have to go to an overlay or something of that nature, it costs considerably more. We also have a concrete replacement project where we're going all over town in places where the sidewalks have been lifted up by trees, tree roots. We'll go through and do isolated repairs there because it becomes a liability issue to the city when the sidewalk separates and people can trip and fall. And so we address that as best we can given the budget allocations. This is just a general chart. This originally was prepared for council, so I think it's more for their consideration as to how much we're spending every year. But you can see over the next 2 years, we have a considerable amount. Briscoe, obviously, and Ms. McClish can speak at that at length because she spent a considerable amount of her career dealing with Briscoe, and it's not over yet. Then it goes at least 20 years. So unless you really want to talk about that, I'm going to move on. Okay. Current stations, we went through many different derivations on the police station, different sites that we evaluated and went to the voters two or three different times. We finally went and renovated our existing police station, which actually has turned out very nice. They're just moving in this week, as a matter of fact. But we completely gutted all the electrical and data communications to bring it into a modern facility. We updated and made better use of the interior space. So even though we're only adding 10 feet on to the south part of the property, it actually provides a much better working environment and facility for our police to do their operations. And it looks like it's going to last for a considerable amount of time. Huskell Park, that actually was up the hill. I think everybody saw it. It was a hidden, the old Huskell jail from 1905. It was hidden from view, overgrown with bushes, raspberries, everything else. We actually cleared all that out in a joint effort with the community. We improved the property, put in some ADA improvements so that people could actually access the property. And we have some other improvements that we'll talk about a little bit later on, but that was a very successful project, recently wrapped up. Corporation Yard Phase 1, that's where I'm housed. We're actually, the existing building is a metal, I call them Butler buildings, but they're temporary buildings. And I think ours was built in 1965 with a 20-year lifespan. And as you can see, it's 2015. But we ran out of space for administrative purposes. We want to make better use of the interior space within the building that's there. So original plan was to build a separate building where we'd house the administration people, like the director of public works, the secretary, myself, superintendents, and have a large area where we can actually congregate, like a big break room. And then we're going to take the existing facility and upgrade the interior to put locker rooms for both men and women, which we currently don't have, separate facilities. And so that's all coming along. It looks like in about end of June we'll be moving into the Corporation Yard, the new building. But that's been a very good project. Car Corral upgrade, we did some ADA improvements. I don't know if you just noticed, we just finished that a couple of weeks ago. And the problem that we had there was the existing current ADA standards require certain grade limitations. And the way the grade was at the Car Corral, the existing spaces, it really was nowhere close to meeting that minimum grade or the maximum grade. Also, there wasn't a place for people to actually walk protected once they got out of their car ADA-wise. They'd have to go back into traffic. So what we did was on the east side of the property, we actually installed a sidewalk against the building, the dry cleaners. We leveled out the asphalt. We actually took it out and replaced it so it would actually be completely level so that we could put in the ADA spaces and provide a place for people to get out and access the village. It's actually been successful. Now, we're going to follow that up this summer by going through the rest of the parking lot and doing our isolated little repairs and doing a slurry seal, which isn't an ultimate fix, but given the budget, that's as best as we can do at the moment. Heritage Square Park restroom, we're just signing the contracts right now. We have a contractor on board. They're actually going to build a prefabricated restroom offsite in Texas, I believe, and ship it here. And it'll probably take about 3 months, and it's going to be next to the old schoolhouse within the Heritage Square Park. So it'll be a nice facility that people, when the Rotary Bandstand and everything is going, we currently, without having to go over the swinging bridge, really have a place, a restroom. And the Soto Sports Complex, we've done some ADA improvements on the ball fields to try to make it better for elderly people and others to be able to access the different facilities, but we only could go so far, and this is actually our CDBG, Community Development Block Grants, that we've used, that's where we're concentrating most of the money right now. There's another ball field there where we couldn't do that on the original phase one. We just didn't have enough money. So we're going to try to implement that this summer, get it actually designed and try to build it hopefully in the fall or next spring. This is the corporation upgrade that I was talking about. This is the existing building. As it states, it's $165,000 between sewer, water, and sales tax, and that's good that we can justify using the sewer and water, the enterprise funds for this facility. It really does help out. Constructing the separate men's and women's locker rooms, conforming to ADA, which I think is just about every building, you have to go through that, and to provide a break room for the workers. The Elm Street Community Center, I don't know if everybody's been out there, but they're at the Soto Complex. But this building was originally built, I think, 30 years ago. And we received some prefabricated trailers from the school district. They were getting rid of because they were at the end of their useful life. They were banded together, and a building was made out of them. And we've been in there for 30 years. And we've tried to do certain things to improve it, like replace the roof. But unfortunately, we can't get any funding, because you can't put a 20-year roof on a structure that's 20, 30 years past its useful life. So with a lot of discussions, we have a plan now to set aside money so that we can put a new modular building, hopefully in exactly the same footprint, because we've done some ADA improvements in the past to lead up to that building and to provide a better place for the school children and the Parks and Recreation Department to house. And as it states, this also depends upon the potential rec center that's going in at West Brand Street next to the Women's Center on that large property. We may be able to move the Parks and Rec staff over to that facility. And Teresa can probably talk about that a little better than I could if you want more information. Council chamber upgrade. This mostly has to do with the audiovisual. I don't know if you had any problems with the microphones or anything. But renovations to bring it to current standards, and also ADA within the building, making better use of the facilities and the restrooms, making it, this actual origin was a fire station, and they renovated it to try to turn it into a council chambers that'll just make it a better facility, better able to use the facility. East Branch Streetscape, I think there's just a beautification project between Mason Street and it looks like Crown Terrace. And I know Teresa is very involved in this, trying to get the funding together. But it'll be just trying to beautify the area to try to bring development into the area, make it a little nicer for people on this side of town. We've done similar things over on East Grand Avenue between Oak Park and Elm Street. And it's time to bring that into the village now that we've done so many improvements. Citywide solar panel project. This actually, my current boss, Jeff English, the director of public works, had a lot of discussions with the school district that you've seen over by the high school and other places where they put in solar collectors and the funding plan that they put in place to do it. And so we're exploring that right now to try to determine if we can implement those at the city hall and all the city buildings around town to try to take advantage of the grants that are available and lessen the costs for electricity. So I think that's still in the development phase. I don't think there's a definite report on that at the moment. It's under consideration. Don Roberts Field Lighting. We've done improvements on a few of the fields out there, but there's one field. Don Roberts is the one that's westernmost towards Grover Beach. I believe it's used mostly for Little League. Areas of that. Well, it's currently not lit. And so what we'd like to do is modernize it and put some lighting in there. And the problem with that is that you always have a little bit of light spill, and we do have some surrounding neighborhoods that are in the area. So there's been a lot of discussions over the last couple of years as to what the allowable levels are, how we can make the technology of the system. We're actually going to use LED fixtures to try to save money. But we might have to actually convert it from a Little League field into soccer fields in order to be able to better direct the light and make use of the space. I know the council has a lot of input on this one, that possibly this is something we can wait for the future date, but It's something we pretty much have designed. We'd have to get it out to bid probably by about end of August so they'd be able to order the lights to put them in place in December and January when they're reworking the fields at the slow times, because these are working facilities. Now, the East Grand Avenue sidewalks, I don't know if anybody ever walks over the bridge. It seems like most people are people going to the high school or the junior high. But right where East Grand Avenue goes over Highway 101, the sidewalks on each side, due to the sloping nature of the overpass, they're just in a very serious state of disrepair. And as you can see from the pictures, there's 2 and 3 inches of gaps that have developed over time. So we'd probably have to put in some kind of reinforcing structure on the hillside. It could end up being very expensive, and Caltrans has been nice enough to let us take care of all this maintenance on our own dollar. But this is obviously a public concern because it is heavily used, especially by the school children. Payment management, this is just a chart to just try to explain, kind of like the old Fram oil filter commercials, you know, pay me now or pay me later. That if we spend the money to maintain the roads to stay in their current state, they won't degrade to a level where you have to do very serious repairs in order to bring them to where they are. Slurry seals, they're like 30 to 40 cents a square foot, which I believe, what is that, times nine? What, $2.70 for a square yard? If you end up having to go to some kind of rehabilitation, it can go to $30 to $35 a square yard. And when you look at a road like James Way or others, which are really weren't designed correctly in the first place because they weren't intended to be used for their current purpose, they were country roads, it can be a considerable amount of money. So this is just a chart explaining that. And there's just some statements, I guess, to show that we're complying with the general plan, and Teresa can probably speak better in this, but it maintains and improves the multimodal transportation, uses the circulation system as a positive element to the community, encourages adequate infrastructure to support businesses and development, and ensures that adequate water and sewer services are available. And again, our master plans are just meant for existing infrastructure and taking us to build out within the currently defined zoning level. So that pretty much concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer your questions as well as Ms. McLeish.
Thank you, Mr. Lynn. We'll start with Commissioner Mack. Do you have any questions?
Yeah, just a couple. On that one slide with the slurry seal, extending the life of the road, okay. Has staff looked at chip seal at all and seeing how many more years they can get out of chip seal by adding another 25 cents or 35 cents to the equation?
Well, we don't have anybody from Caltrans here, but I know that a couple of years ago they tried that on a road towards Morro Bay, and it didn't go over very well. The city I was at previously, we did chip seals, and they do last a little bit longer, but unfortunately they have really sharp, angular rock. Mm-hmm. So especially if you're doing a cul-de-sac or residential area, first time little Johnny falls down from his bicycle, they rip half the skin off their legs. It's good for country-type places like
arterial roads or
things like that.
Heavily trafficked roads, but not residential.
It has been used in other places where you do a chip seal, and it's called a cape seal, where you actually come in and do a microsurface over the top of that. And we have considered that. We're actually going to do our pavement management update this fall, and we may put the cape seal in as one of the alternative treatments. Because when it comes to roadway pavement design, it goes on a 0 to 100 scale, with 100 being absolutely perfect. Taking all the imperfections or anything we have right now, our system is actually in pretty good shape. We're at about a 71. So there's certain places, if a road is rated at a 90, you can get by with just a little slurry seal every 5 years. When it starts coming down that scale, when you get to about a 50, you got to do an overlay if it goes less than that. So at certain points, if you have from 0 to 20, complete rebuild, you know, and there's certain levels where within those levels we have suggested treatments, we may put the cape seal in there for a certain spot. But again, that depends on price. And that's something we have to evaluate. And there are some consultants that's what they do for a living.
Yeah.
And that's who we're going to ferret out through
the RFP
process.
We're looking at it. Yeah. And then another question I had was when we're looking at the solar panels, Are we thinking putting them up in the air like they did at Arroyo Grande High School over parking lots, or are they going on the ground, or what? What's the thinking on the solar panels?
At the moment, project? It's mostly on top of the buildings. And maybe Teresa can speak better about that.
Yeah, I don't. It certainly hasn't been designed yet. We're looking at each of the city facilities to see, what might be most, appropriate, and including the police station, because we're looking at some help in screening the rooftop equipment that's been there on that existing police station, but was sort of uncovered when the trees came down. So we're looking at opportunities there and looking at the solar to help provide that. Nothing's been designed. Nothing's been worked out. We're just trying to work with some solar companies to see, what bang for the buck, so to speak, we can get for the installation and the offset in cost over future years.
Thank you.
Commissioner Keene?
Talking about solar, I was sitting here. When we have a facility such as the city building where it has very, very limited places to put them so they'll be in the sun and generate electricity, can we over-design another building and use it as credit for that building? That's just a question, because I've not really heard anybody talking about that. So I just wondered if since we're doing multiples, we've got some buildings such as this, which would give us a lot more area than to actually need for this building. And I just wonder if there's some kind of program that PG&E will let you overbuild where you have the most efficiency and let it offset a building you've got that you can't put them on the roof. Just a thought when we just started talking about this. I've been through several of these updates, and I see, of course, there's a lot of things on it that have always been on it because of the 5 years out on the projects and accumulate. So I'm ready to accept this, as presented. But I did want to, and this doesn't have to do with accepting this, but I'm really not in favor of putting more modular buildings down there on that property. I don't like modular buildings. They don't last. They don't think, and I think that we ought to replace that building with that facility with a building, not go to Vandenberg and find old dumpy ones that they're getting rid of and putting them on the property. I'm just not in favor of that. But I know it has nothing to do with what we're doing tonight, and I'm sure that I'm going to have my chance at council to say the same thing. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Martin?
No comments, thanks.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
I have no comments other than I just recently met with Solar City or whatever their name was to see about putting solar panels on my house. And I would hate to see them on any of this in the city buildings here in the village because they're ugly. And I don't, I kind of listened to the program that they had on it, and I thought it wasn't even going to be profitable for me to do solar panels, but I don't know if the offset is really there for the city.
And that's to be determined, certainly. And in terms of Commissioner Keene's inquiry about utilizing several structures and making it with more on some and less on others, making sure that we're able to use those sort of credits. I'm not sure of that either. I think that's what Jeff English is looking into as a main factor for whether we go forward on that. And you'll see some of the institutional uses like the schools, have realized that they'll achieve a benefit for installing the solar panels over time. And as far as the aesthetics, we do get some criticism sometimes when folks put up solar panels. I think design is coming along where they're able to, make them look a little more embedded and less flashy on some structures, but certainly it's still a visual concern, and that's also would be looked at in terms of this potential city project.
That's all I had.
I have no comments at this time. So I'm open to a motion.
I think I do have one more comment. As I read this from cover to cover, wonderful weekend reading, I noticed that there's going to be a lot of work done on the point on the other side, east side or whatever. But there was no targeted improvements for La Pointe right back here. And once that parking lot went in, there's a lot more traffic that's traveling that. And that section of the road is horrible.
Well, actually, that's on the docket for this summer.
Is it?
It is.
Oh, good.
But I know that we still have the problem with, the property that it juts into the roadway. That won't be corrected. But we will make it a better drivable path summer.
The surface of it is horrible. Yes.
It'll be nicer.
Oh, good. Glad to hear that. That's all.
I think what we're supposed to be doing is just see if these projects are in conformance with our land use element.
Right. Consistent with the general plan.
And see if they're consistent with the general plan. And I mean, that's really what our purview here is, to look at, what staff's provided and evaluate it to see if it falls in line with our land use element. And I don't see anything here that doesn't. I mean, it all does.
I agree.
So I'm full support.
And Chair Georgia, actually would be all the elements in the general plan. The land use is really the pivotal element and the circulation element. So, for example, if we were proceeding with a capital improvement program that had no money or prioritization for sidewalks or bike lanes, then that might conflict with circulation element policies for multimodal accommodation for the streets. So that sort of thing. But yes, that's exactly the question before you, is conformity with all the elements in the general plan.
I move the Planning Commission adopt a resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Rio Grande, finding that the capital improvement program for the fiscal years 2016-17 is consistent with the city's general plan.
Second.
Take a roll vote on that, please.
Commissioner King?
Yes.
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
And Chair George?
Yes.
Best I better get busy. So, thank you.
You got a lot of work to do there. Move on to item 9B, the election of officers.
Excuse me. Teresa, are you leaving? I want to talk to you after the meeting. That's if you're going home. Thank you. I'm sorry to interrupt. I was afraid he was going to get out of here.
I nominate Lon George to continue as chairperson of this commission.
I second it.
I'm reading my sheet here, so I've been nominated, Lon George, as the chair, and I have a second. Any other nominations?
I think Lon's been doing a terrific job.
Thank you. So we'll take a vote on that.
Commissioner King?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Chair George?
Yes. So at this time, I'll call to select all nominations for a vice chair. I'd like to nominate John Keane.
I'll second.
Are there any other nominations? No? Okay. So I'll close the nominations and We'll vote for the vice chair.
Chair George?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yes.
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Board's got it going. We'll move on to the notice of administrative decisions since May 5th. We have the Gospel Lighthouse Church, a Cherry Sand fundraising sale, and the Five Cities Men's Club repairing a 245-foot wall, Paulding wall. Did the commission have any questions or comments regarding the administrative decisions?
I have a couple comments. And it's regards to the wall. I think that's terrific that we're going to be improving that wall. Is that mainly going to be done through volunteers and whatnot?
Yes, I'm actually very happy that you asked that. The Five Cities Men's Club have stepped up. They have done a tremendous amount of work in terms of coming up with a project to repair, rebuild a large section of that crumbling stone wall around the Paulding School. So we're very excited about the project. The city is participating as well in terms of traffic control and plan review, of course. And so that project's going to, with this blessing this evening, start shortly. You will probably see some slow traffic in that vicinity over some of the summer months as the wall is being constructed and then refaced with the original rock. So we ask your patience while that work is going on. We'll have flaggers at the very beginning of the project and then be able to bring some K-rails in, likely to protect the workers and still allow traffic to proceed. And we'll be obviously cognizant of work hours for school attendance, both the end of the school year, regular school year, and summer school at Paulding. So this issuance is recognizing that we did take a look at the wall, the potential historic significance of the wall that was outlined when 227 was relinquished. And even though that section, though it looks historic, is not necessarily deemed historic, it is required to comply with Department of Interior, Secretary of Interior guidelines. And they've worked that into the plan as well. And we're just very excited about this volunteerism and these community members stepping up to get this important project completed.
You actually answered the questions before I even asked them. That was wonderful. I was wondering how they're going to be protected, number one, being volunteers and all, and then how the traffic was going to be handled. And I guess there'll be notification along that with to the public as well when the construction's going to start. Commence. Terrific. I look forward to seeing that happen.
I got a quick question on number one. It says Walmart. What part of where is that actually going to be? In the parking lot, up on their sidewalk, or what? The rest of them are pretty self-explanatory, but that one is pretty wide open.
It was at the door entry.
Yeah, last
I was
year.
There
yeah,
at the door
I
entry.
Think it's just like last year, and I was looking for the description for each location. I know that they weren't planning any changes from last year, so it's going to be probably right near the entrance there.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions?
None for me.
No.
Okay. I think the Paulding upgrade is going to be great. Needed it for a long time.
Be nice. Okay, so we'll move on to commission communications. Do we have any commissioners who'd like to communicate?
Not tonight, yeah. Thank you.
I have a communication. I used to own a business in the village here, so I'm very sympathetic to things that may impact our business. And I've heard from a few of the local merchants that the Amgen bike tour had a negative impact, zero sales days for them. So my question is, now that they've gone through our village three or four times now, do we have any numbers to support the tourism that was brought in and the positive benefits that it brought with them? Or is it possible for, I guess it's a two-part question, is it possible to still allow them to come through but maybe take a slightly different route where they don't close off this main East Branch Street here?
Well, we issue each year, at least in the recent years, when requested, a temporary use permit for the event. And it actually takes a considerable amount of planning, mostly on the part of police and public works as well. We do try to make sure it's a rolling closure, so we don't actually close the streets for very long. Indeed, it was only, I believe, 7 minutes or so when they first entered city limits down by Valley and then made their way out. However, parking-wise, no parking signs have to be placed a considerable amount of time in advance of the event. We do not have any numbers in terms of, a spike in tourism or a decline. We do get some complaints for all our events in some respect or another where streets have to be closed for parades or festivals. And that's always balanced by sort of the community benefits for having events and image for the city that the events can create. Perhaps next year I could bring the temporary use permit to you for approval, and we can look at the conditions of approval and some of the factors and provide a little more discussion before approving it. It's a temporary use permit typically approved by me and just reported to you afterwards. That's just a suggestion.
That would just maybe looking at an alternative route that doesn't take them, that doesn't require the closure. And I have to admit, I wasn't here during that time. I was told by the merchants that that our street was closed starting at 11 o'clock. So I don't know if that was true, because I know that the bikers weren't supposed to come through until 2:30. Mm-hmm. So closing at 11 and reopening at 4:30 really is the majority of the day for a lot of these merchants. And also, apparently, from the merchants that I spoke with, they weren't notified that the road would be closed for that long. So they weren't able to anticipate the lack of sales. So just if we're sensitive to the merchants that are right here, because and I know they do get the brunt of the impact of the events. So that was it. Any comments? No. And staff communications?
Speaking of events, we have the Strawberry Festival coming right up, and we are in, it's been several years. We have, a pretty standard temporary use permit issued for that event as well. It's a very, as you know, very large event. We are going to have a kind of a recap session after the event this year, in part to address just different concerns about impacts to village businesses, as well as the benefits, significant benefits of the income to the VIA, for example, for hosting the event. So I'm trying to remember the date of that. I think it's the first week of June, June 3rd. We'll give you a notification of that, and we'll probably have it right here and just notice the opportunity to the public and see if we can get some feedback and comments regarding the event that we might be able to address in future years.
Okay. And that's open to the public?
Yes.
Oh. Any other comments? No. So I think at this point we're ready to adjourn.
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.